All right, guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and today we've got a very special guest along with John Barbin. We've got Diedrich on the phone, a.k.a. Didi, and you've probably seen him in the forums giving lots of advice and things like that, as well as Didi was the Adonis Index Transformation Build Contest winner of the last one. So he's got a lot of advice on what he did to get where he needed to be and things like that. So what I want to do is Deidre, just welcome to the call, and you know, we're looking forward to kind of extracting some of this this information from you. How about that?
Hey, yeah, that sounds good.
That's cool, man. All right, John. Well, I tell you what, let me let you go ahead and take it away, because I know you've got a couple questions you want to ask him right off the bat, as far as you know, just.
Okay. No, I'll get it going. First of all, I guess Didi, can you share with everybody how old you are and how long you've been training?
I just turned 23 about a month ago. So by the last week of the contest, I turned 23, and I've been doing like Adonis stuff since October. And before that, I never did really regular training. Like I joined a gym in Amsterdam, like where I lived before, and there, like, the trainer gave me really shitty programs, so you do it like a few times. And then you give it up. But, like, I used to do other sports stuff, so it's not like I completely couch potato before. But, like, weightlifting, I only started October.
So regular weightlifting, really, in October, you didn't really have much weightlifting experience before that at all?
Actually, hardly any, because, like, in my previous gym, they only showed me how to do the machines. So, like, free weights, I had never done before. So it took me actually a while to figure out, like, how to actually properly handle dumbbells and that kind of stuff.
Okay, interesting. So your experience on the Adonis program is actually your first real structured weight training experience.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, that's good. And I wanted to get your age out there just so guys can there's definitely two groups of people out there. There's a kind of an older group and a younger group, and they seem to have sort of different interests. So it's good that you can communicate, or at least – the younger guys are going to relate to kind of the stories that you're going to be telling, just because you're sort of in their same shoes, especially as a, like you just said, as a novice to weight training. I mean, this is the start. So what, I guess walk us through what it felt like to, I mean, why'd you jump in the contest in the first place?
It just was there. So, I mean, I was doing the stuff, and since it was a contest, and I felt like I was having good, stuff was going good, so I was like, yeah, why not? I guess I have a chance. I mean, I was sure I actually had a good chance, but
right,
because I believed in it, of course, but it was not like the contest actually made me do, okay, of course it gave a little bit of extra motivation, but that was not the main point.
Right. Did you start training a little? Did you start taking it more serious when you were in the contest and started thinking, "Man, I probably can win this"?
Yeah, of course. I tightened up a little bit, and even on harder times, it just gives you a little extra motivation to keep doing it, even when like you otherwise would maybe have taken a break. But mm-hmm. apart from that, well, it's hard to say, really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Unless you went back, and how will you ever know unless you relived your life without doing the contest?
So, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, so walk us through what it was like to – what the 12 weeks were like. Was there – did you run into – did you just stick to the program? Did you add stuff to it? Did you run into any barriers? We've had other people like push themselves into overtraining. We have other people experimenting with other diet strategies. So give us kind of the rundown on how much personal tweaking you did and how much you just sort of did things as they were laid out.
Yeah, I have to admit that I added up a little bit of stuff, like you call it, because I'm a bronze customer, so I had like the four basic workouts a week, which I did, mm-hmm. and then I felt like I could use a fifth extra day just for the contest. So I know that you're not supposed to just add stuff, but I felt like, because I think a few weeks before I had Rage. Mm-hmm. And there were some, there is like one day of Rage where you have, I think they start with two pyramids of incline dumbbell presses.
Mm-hmm.
So since well, I guess a lot of starters feel like their pecs are a weak point. And since I didn't have any specializations, that I figured that would be, because first you have like two pyramids of incline presses, then you have like lateral raises, Tate press, and curls. So you have like the main groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured that was like a good booster for.
Oh, that's interesting. So you use the Fibonacci pyramids as a booster. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but just like one of them. I think actually I used a few different ones, but that was like my main one.
And you did that once a week as an addition?
Yeah, every Saturday, I think, just for the weekend to have something extra going on. Cause actually the more you get into the program, the more you feel like you shouldn't work out every day, but if you start working out 4 days a week, the days you don't work out, you feel like something is missing. Cause once it starts getting, like, I noticed a lot of guys on the forum said this, but like, it gets so much a part of your daily routine that they just feel like you need like 5 or 6 days a week, not 4. At least if you have the time, like, cause I'm a student, so it's not, of course I have a pretty flexible schedule, but.
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of add to that point, this is where the podcast we just did on overtraining and underconditioning comes in. It's possible. And everyone should know this. It is possible to train 5, 6, and 7 days a week if your schedule and the other stresses in your life allow for it. So just as Didi said, he can do this, and he did the extra day, and it worked for him. Obviously, it worked for him. That's because his schedule allowed for it. Now, anyone can test that out, but just because Didi could do it doesn't mean you can if the rest of your schedule is kind of prohibitive. So the base workout of the 4 weeks is my general starting point for everyone. But people can work up or down from that point given what they can fit. So obviously it worked for Didi. Howard, you got anything right now?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm the same way when it comes to like keeping consistent and like for the past week, I really haven't done anything. I've just been slammed. Just getting stuff done and, trying to really ramp up for, Adonis 3.0 and all this other stuff. And I just haven't been working out just for this week. And plus, I'm kind of trying to work on this little nagging shoulder tweak I've got, which I'm kind of hard headed and not resting it, but now it's getting better. But I'm the same way. It's like taking a day or two off during the week, just it feels odd. And so I typically work out every day, unless I'm going somewhere like, going out of town or, like this coming up weekend, we're going to Kansas City. But, I'm the same way. So typically what I will do is, there's certain just big body compound movements that I'll just like doing. Like I like doing a leg press every once in a while. I won't do it on a typical AI day, but I'll do it over the weekend. Or maybe I want to mess around and do like decline bench or something like that. I'll do it then. I won't put it in like during the actual days that I'm doing, the structured plan. But on my off days, I won't do much. Maybe I'll just do 5 sets. You see what I'm saying? And then go for a walk and read, and that'll pretty much be it. And that's good for me. It kind of keeps my mind where it needs to be. Obviously. I've said, plenty of times that I'll walk and read. That's kind of where I get a lot of my inspiration for a lot of the content we produce and just ideas. So that's also kind of a part of my ritual, I guess you could say, my morning ritual is to kind of get that, and it gets my brain fresh. So leaving that out of my day, it makes it feel kind of empty. So I can relate to that.
Yeah, I just want to add one more thing to that. Fifth day is that I only did this for the contest. Like right now I'm back at 4 days just because mm-hmm. I'm working 5 days a week. So like it's not something that I do all the time, but just as it fitted in the contest, I did it, but it's not something that I do consistently.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's.
Did you take a break after the contest? Any kind of time off?
Not from training, but from dieting. Actually, I'm still more or less on a dieting break, but.
Okay, so and then I guess that's a good transition into dieting. Since you're in the build category, everyone's got this belief that they have to overeat food to build muscle. Obviously, if anyone listening, if you've heard us talk, we don't believe that. So you won the build category, so tell us what you did for nutrition.
The first, like, I'm actually, for me, the contest was, there were like three big parts due to like circumstances. Like the first 5 weeks I was home here in Norway. Well, it's not my home, but that's where I live. So for the first 5 weeks, I could keep it pretty tight. The first weeks I tracked every calorie, like to make sure I was in a deficit, like around 1400 a day on average. Just because I knew that after those 5 weeks I would go home, which would be like ridiculous eating, like home to my parents in Belgium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of need to plan it ahead because I knew there were going to be 3 weeks of really big overeating. So just so for the first 5 weeks, like I really kept it under 1400 calories a day.
Interesting. And then did you use ESE or no?
Well, I never read the book. I just kind of don't necessarily eat all the time.
Right.
So I don't know if it's actually official ESE, but it is kind of in the same direction. Like I often don't eat breakfast because it makes me tired.
Sure.
And like I just follow my own plan. Like whenever, like I'm a big evening eater. So usually like I would consume most of my calories during afternoon, late afternoon and evening.
Right.
But
so
that's just personal preference.
Sure. And that's the best way I think it should be done regardless. And then, so towards the end of the contest, what were you doing as far as diet?
Well, by circumstances, actually the 3 weeks at home turned into 5 because I needed to stay a bit longer for some medical stuff. And so actually it was good that I lost quite some weight in the beginning because I added again quite a lot during 5 weeks. Because if your mom cooks every day and like they want to spoil you because you lost so much weight and you look skinny, it's kind of hard to resist all the force feeding, which I'm sure like a lot of guys who still live with their moms can understand. Because if you live alone, you have a lot of control about what you eat and when you eat. But once you are with your mom, maybe it's the same if you have a girlfriend or a wife. But like moms tend to be very protective, and I think like, oh, my son is not eating well enough, so let's make like a lot of food. And it's kind of hard if you see your mom twice a year to say like, oh, sorry, I'm not eating dinner with you tonight, even though you cooked some nice pasta or whatever.
Yeah, so, it's almost insulting.
Yeah, exactly. So I try to fast once in a while. Like I actually did most fasting during those 5 weeks. Because like when I'm at home and I can control my calories, I can control them and I don't need fasting so much. But I did a few fasts during those 5 weeks. Like whenever, like there was no big meal with the family, but just everybody just would have to make their own dinner for something, then I would just skip those meals.
Sure.
Just as a way to not completely overdo it.
Okay, so that's interesting. So based on your circumstances, you just adjusted how you ate accordingly. And, I mean, you look good. You look good at the end. I mean, it came.
Yeah, but I had two more, like I came home again 2 weeks before the end of the contest. And then actually my social life kind of went up because it was the end of the exams. So I also had a lot more partying and eating going on than at the beginning of the contest. But still, I managed to just drop all the extra stuff that was around. So I think I didn't lose very much fat in total, but I didn't, well, I mean, I'm in build category, so that wasn't my main point, but yeah, I just lost a lot in the beginning, then I probably put back on something in the middle, and then in the end, I just tried to tighten up a bit.
Yeah, but, so go ahead.
Yeah, but like you mentioned in one of the transformation call, what's it called? Like
coaching calls.
Coaching calls, yeah. Like you mentioned that Ron and Jason mentioned the like last days they really tightened up, and that was actually the same for me. Like I was already, of course, getting a lot less bloated by the end, but just like the last 24 hours, I like just by fasting and like water depletion, I think I lost another, at least an extra inch just in like a day or something, which of course cannot all be due to fat.
Right. But it also enhances the look.
Yeah. But, I think like the front pic, like one of the front pictures that got posted is from Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And the other pictures, like the ones that are more from the site, are from Sunday. And actually the difference there is like 1.5 inch, I think, even. So like on Saturday I hit by the end of the contest I hit like 1.6, like 1.8, like I hit exactly like the golden number. But then by Sunday, I lost another 1.5 inch of retention or something. So like the difference between those there's even a lot of difference between the pictures from the two different days.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you did that because I told everyone to do that. I don't know how many people followed through with that, but you're an example of how much different it can get in 24 hours. And that's the difference between the type of the way we do the final pictures and the way a bodybuilding show works. At a bodybuilding show, there is they don't have a choice. So like if the show is on Saturday and people have to compete on Saturday, but they may look better on Sunday just the way the water deplete works. So the way we do it, you actually have I told everyone, do it a couple of days, do a 24-hour span and see what you look like. And like you said, your look changed like significantly from what just a day later. And that actually makes a big difference. And, it's interesting because I've been to a few bodybuilding shows where guys miss it on the day of the show, but the night before and the night after they would have won, and they miss it the day they're on stage. So it's, and I mean, you know, we don't have one day. We just have to have the pictures in before the end. So that's an interesting way of doing it. And I'm glad you did that because that was the whole point in the first place.
Yeah. I had like,
yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I had two big photo shoots, like just in front of a mirror. And then I think Sunday after I took in the afternoon, like the final pictures, I was like, okay, I should probably keep it going until Monday because there would have been another chance. But then I started eating a little bit again and was like, all the gates were open. And that's when I actually started my post contests, binge. So yeah, I actually finished the contest one day before because just I couldn't stop eating anymore.
How was your post contest binge?
Probably very much junk. I don't even remember what I ate, but I think the first thing I ate was like some potato chips or something, which is not even that satisfying, but it's just the first thing you want to have after like cutting for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, you know, the best thing about doing these contests and just kind of talking to everyone, and I guess the best lesson and kind of ahas that I think a lot of guys are getting is the fact that, you know, especially if you do like go off the reservation and start eating a lot or whatever it is, you know, you can, if you're within, or let's say you're getting ready to go on vacation or something, I mean, you can be within, as long as you're within striking distance, and that's kind of what I call it. I mean, you can, within 30 days of you going on vacation or wanting to be ready, as long as you can kind of hover and basically just kind of eyeball and keep yourself at a decent level, I mean, within 30 days, you can look really good at the end of 30 days. And so it kind of becomes, you know, people start to figure out that it kind of becomes just a way of maintaining a close enough. You don't have to maintain like a ripped, you know what I'm saying? You're not trying to maintain this ripped look, but if you can maintain this look that's within striking distance to ripped, you can get there within 30 days relatively easily and that's pretty quick within 30 days. I mean, guys are turning some stuff around, which is really powerful for a lot of people. I mean, include myself, John. I know Pelon's talked about it too. Is when you know that if you can get to a point where you can just maintain almost effortlessly, you know, just by you know, keeping your eye on a couple of things, you're keeping your eye on the scale, not being overly kind of dramatic about it. But then you know you're going to go on vacation or go to the beach or anything like that, and you've got a heads up. You know, within 30 days, you can do some significant damage in a good way. And walk on that thing like a rock star.
Yeah, you don't need to stay in your final contest shape, but you can get back to it pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of the point.
Yep.
So Didi, so now where are you headed? What would you give for advice to anybody else who's trying to, maybe not if they're not even going to be in the competition, but just following the program, like what advice would you give to other guys, other build guys?
Yeah, and another point, like it's actually something that Brad mentioned, I think, at he made a blog post about it once, but something that I found very useful was, oh, it was a post about local optimums, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. Like maybe you can post a link about that again. Because I said for 5 weeks I was kind of off, especially on eating. So, but you should always, like, if you are in a period that you eat a lot, you should at least, like, focus extra on the training. Because, like, I was home and I thought it was for 3 weeks, which then turned into five. But I just got, like, local gym membership for a month, which was not that cheap. But I was like, okay, if I'm going to pig out on foods, at least I should go to the gym every day here. So, I mean, circumstances are not always perfect. Maybe you are in a situation where you will eat a lot and, like, gain some weight again. But at least that doesn't mean you shouldn't work out just because you can't control your diet. Like, at least either you should control your diet or your workouts, even if one of the others somehow doesn't work out in your life.
Do what you can.
Yeah, exactly. And because, like, a lot of people somehow seem to think that you need both, but both of them have different target. I mean, you diet for weight loss and you train for muscle. So it's not because one of the two is off due to, like, unideal circumstances that it means the other one isn't going to keep getting results.
Right.
Even if you stop losing fat or even gain some fat again at some point, that doesn't mean you should stop building muscle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. I think what happens there is people get caught up in a and I've noticed this happen a lot. People have this feeling like it's all or nothing. So it's either all – like the training's got to be spot on and the diet has to be spot on, and they feel like they have – both of those have to be really working to – I don't even know if they believe that they – do the same thing. I think it's a mindset that, you know, if they've had a good day in the gym, they'll have a good day eating. But if they have a lousy day in the gym, they sort of let the eating go too. So it's, mm-hmm. it's sort of a left brain, right? I don't know. It's like bouncing out of your logical brain and into your emotional brain or something. And sort of like, I totally know what you're saying. And that's really good advice. But, and it's something people, I think everyone feels at some point where if one of them goes, they just let the other go. But that's, you know, listen to what Didi says. That's the wrong way to think of it. Like, one of them doesn't have to compromise the other. If they're not both kind of, if you're not like peaking on both of them, that's okay. As long as at least one of them's working, that's good.
Yeah, I you know, what's really interesting that you brought this up, because I think I was going to write about this tomorrow, but just because I've had a couple of little blips come up in my life that I've had kind of had to move around, and you know, when anything comes up, I start to think about having what I call an insect mentality, or like an ant or like a spider. So like if you go and stomp on an anthill or go like trash a spider web, you know, the spider or the ant just doesn't go roll over and die, or it doesn't, you know, sit there and pout for like 3 days. I mean, literally right after you get finished stomping on it or tearing that thing down, it's building another one. And then you could tear it down again. And it's building another one. And it's building another one. It's building another one. So, you know, whenever I have things kind of come across where like little not stepping stones, but just kind of things that are kind of in my way, or, you know, if I slip up on something or if I make a mistake, and God knows I make plenty of mistakes, you know, it's, I just kind of think about that. I'm like, all right, it sounds bad. I don't say, okay, what would an ant do? But I just kind of think about that, and it kind of puts me in the right frame of mind, the right perspective to kind of keep on going. And because we all fall off the horse, mm-hmm. in every facet. I mean, I don't care if it's your relationship with your wife, or, you know, you're working out, or your diet, or something happens at work, or whatever it is. I mean, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to slip up. Something's going to happen. Nobody's perfect. So it's what you do when faced with this type of adversity that defines you. It's not the actual adversity itself. So that's really good. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, everyone is human, but like a lot of guys in the forum seem to have this problem, so that's
Oh yeah, yeah. That's good advice. Yeah. So moving forward, then, you've taken a break with the diet. What are you doing with your training right now?
You mean at this point? Mm-hmm. Well, I was in Belgium again for 2 weeks for like some more stuff, and actually I took a break 2 weeks just because like the first week I just needed like a mental. I think it was more mental than physical. And the second week, like, I had some surgery, so I was just flat for a week. So mm-hmm. I couldn't even, I mean, I didn't do anything else but watching World Cup soccer, because that was the only thing I was on TV in the hospital. But at least I kept my diet under control, because I had my tonsils removed, so that means you can only drink vegetable juice and shit like that. So yeah, it was like an involuntary break off the gym, but yesterday I had my first workout again since I came back this weekend.
Oh, okay. How'd that feel?
Better than ever, actually. I was in a good mood before I started working out, but like after 2 weeks, well, you could really feel the pain, and actually it's also good, like even after months of training, after you've had a break, you suddenly start feeling all the pain again, and I know I like the feeling for. Because then you feel like suddenly like, okay, this is like you really missed the feeling of working out.
Yeah, the soreness is actually an indication, and that's. I'm glad you brought that up. The 2 week break. It's even though you didn't plan the 2 week break, it sort of happened. It's okay for people to take a break. It's Rich just asked the same thing. He's been going hard for a while now, and he just started to feel run down, and that's kind of the signal that you need a break. And typically after the contest, most people are going to want a break. It's because it's a lot of work, and it's relatively stressful, like the diet and everything. A 2 week break is nothing bad for anyone listening. It's not, you're not going to lose any muscle, Matt. Like nothing bad is going to happen in 2 weeks. If anything, you're just going to feel really good when you get back into it. So it's, I don't know, something like by the end of, and if you're going to do some kind of competition at the end of the competition, once it's over, is usually a good time to take a break. Any 12 to 16 weeks, 18 weeks, something like that. It's always okay to take some kind of break after that time frame if you've been pushing really hard. It's pretty hard to do a full year of training without some kind of break. Even it sort of just happens on its own, like something comes up. Most people can't go a whole year without it being broken up for them. But in general, if there's really nothing in your way and nothing comes up, I wouldn't go more than 18, 20 weeks tops without some kind of full week off just for sort of a recovery. And it just sort of works itself out that way. Anyways.
Yeah, except if you're Jason, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's gonna have to take a break now, though.
Yeah, but that's also due to his circumstances, like mm-hmm. he's traveling or something. But still, like, well, maybe, I don't know if you know, but like, there is a running gag around, at least I keep the gag running of, well, he seems kind of inhuman, but like, everybody else needs a break, probably.
He'll have to take one sooner or
later. Yeah.
I think psychologically he does, as right now we're talking behind Jason's back, sort of in front of everybody. I think he wants to, it sounds like he wants to wait till his vacation to kind of use the break then, which makes sense. But yeah, that's an interesting psychological thing. A lot of guys feel like they can't get away from the gym. Like they're worried about not training. I'm sure most guys, if I say right now a month off is okay, most guys are going to think, really, a month? Like, won't I lose a lot of muscle, Matt? Like, I'm sure a week sounds okay, 10 days sounds okay. 2 weeks probably starting to sound kind of long, even though, you know, Didi, you just did it and it was okay. And then if I say 3 weeks, you know, are you starting to think, okay, am I going to start losing size? And then what if I say 4 weeks? 4 weeks off, straight, no training. Like, I bet you most guys would be very uneasy with the thought of not training for 4 weeks for all kinds of reasons, like, are you out of the flow? How much, you know, will I lose strength? Will I lose size? I'm sure guys just can't even, once they get into it, probably don't believe they can take a month off. But I'm not saying you should, but I'm saying it's possible. And if something comes up and that happens, that's not a terrible thing. Like we can come back from a month off, no problem. So, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 week, it's doable. And at some point in the year, you're going to have to take some time off. So it's nothing to be afraid of, I guess.
Yeah, but actually you do lose size. I guess that's where the misunderstanding maybe comes from. Because I noticed after these 2 weeks off, like, you look a little bit shrunk, but it's just, if you're used to training, like, for weeks, or every week for months in a row, like, you have a constant pump, and of course this pump disappears after a few rests, but it comes back immediately. So I guess that's why people think maybe the break makes their muscle shrink.
Yeah, well, I think so. Yeah, I think regular training, like you said, the muscle's kind of constantly hydrated and constantly super compensated, so to speak. So if you're training, if you're never going more than 2 or 3 days without training, you're always reinflating the muscle. So yeah, if you take 2 weeks off, it's not like you've lost. Now this gets into the whole what's muscle, but you haven't really lost muscle fibers as much as they're just not quite as inflated as they normally are.
Mm-hmm.
Howard, you still here?
Yeah, I'm sleeping. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm just listening to you guys bore me about muscle fibers.
Oh,
and all
right.
This other
okay.
Stuff. I'm looking out the window, wondering if I can go take a walk anytime soon. No, I'm
sure.
Playing.
So, well, I mean, do you have anything else for Didi?
No, it's just, like I say, it's just interesting talking about the perceived, what people's perceptions are, you know, regarding not training. It's kind of the same thing when we talk about separating out how much protein people need and if their muscle is going to fall off, or, you know, diet, if you're not eating 6 meals a day, people get all scared and get all scared about metabolism. I mean, it really seems like people are scared to death of what will happen if they make a mistake with their bodies.
Yeah, and like the answer is kind of nothing. Like, Didi, what did you have any preconceived exercise or diet philosophies that you believed in or read about? Did you care before Adonis? Did you even have an opinion?
Hardly. Well, I didn't train, so I didn't have any ideas about that. Well, mm-hmm. I just figured, like, okay, if you work with weights, you gain muscle, but I didn't even, like, bother about it, because I thought, like, big guys were stupid, and, like, just by working out, you would get stupid. That was actually the idea I had. But, yeah, because over here, usually, like, intelligent people get fat, and, like, the jocks are, like, muscular. That's why you think, like, you will turn into a jock if you get, like... Well, anyway, but about dieting, well, of course, you kind of believe the stuff that's out there, but I didn't even think I was overweight before, so I didn't even see a problem. Because, like, I was actually about 40... I probably was about 45 pounds heavier when I started. And, yeah, I actually felt like I was... Okay, I wasn't fit, but I was still, like, within limits, I thought. So I didn't even bother thinking about fitness and health.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So,
yeah, and then you look back on pictures from, like, 1 year ago, and you think, like, man, dude, who is that, like, fat pig, you know? yeah, but, I mean, a lot of people don't even realize they're overweight. Like, all the bodybuilders who think they're bulking and they're building muscle. Like, you think... Yeah, that's actually, I think the only wrong idea I had is that, yeah, I mean, you don't realize how fat you are until you are not fat anymore.
That's really interesting. So your perception of yourself changes, I guess, along the way.
Yeah, because you still feel looking the same until you look back at pictures. Like, if I look into the mirror, to me, it looks like my fat level is still about the same as a year ago, which was like 45 pounds heavier, mm-hmm. which I'm sure was not muscle, which I lost, so it must have been fat. But yeah, it's because, of course, you see yourself in the mirror every day. So every day you readapt your image of how you look. So, like, every day you think you look normal, more or less, well, unless you have, like, issues. But, yeah, but, I mean, every normal person will look into the mirror, and they're used to seeing themselves, so that's what defines normal. But when they lose weight, they still look normal, so they think they don't see the difference as much, because they looked normal before in their eyes, and now they still look normal.
So without
it's just a norm which moves, like, which changes.
Right. So the definition of normal is updated every day, and without a picture, you'll never realize much has changed. And then you see the picture, and you're like, "Whoa, something changed."
Yeah, that's my feeling, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird, because not only does your perception of yourself change of where you were, and you're kind of like, wow. And not only do other people's perceptions of you change, you know, because they're like, oh my God, you're, you know, and they're going to say whatever. I mean, it can. Who knows what's going to come out of people's mouths? It could be positive. It could be skewed negative. It always just kind of blows my mind, the things that comes out of people's mouths when you start to get in better shape. But the biggest thing for me is my perception, or my, I guess, view of the world becomes a lot more broad as far as what people actually look like. Like, I gave the example, I forget when I did, maybe it was an email or something or a video. Actually, I think it was the last video where, you know, Elle and I were at a lake and just hanging out. And when you have a kind of a focus on this and you're trying to get yourself, you know, in better shape, you start to really notice how many people really aren't in shape. And it's a lot. It's a whole lot. And I think this is one of the reasons why you don't see too many women that work out a lot. You'll see it every once in a while, but you don't see it a lot. It's not common to see women that work out a lot actually, you know, be together with a man that doesn't work out a lot. Because, you know, it's kind of like you become almost hypersensitive to body fat levels, I guess you could say. I don't know if that's a right word or maybe the right way to look at it, but I think you guys know where I'm going with that. You almost become hypersensitive to actually the, you know, how much bigger other people are. So it's strange.
Yeah, it's pretty rare for a girl who's like fitness competitor level in shape to be dating a guy who's completely out of shape. It's just sort of like attracts like, so to speak. And mm-hmm. And this bears out in the research on it all too. It's your sort of where you've built yourself to or place yourself on the sort of the shape physical attractiveness scale. Those are the type of people that will be attracted to you and that you'll sort of calibrate your, I don't know, this sort of sounds bad, but almost your choices to some regard. It's kind of like you set a bar, so to speak, for yourself. And you just psychologically choose to kind of only sort of engage other people at that level. I don't know if that sounds shallow, but this is sort of what happens.
It's unconscious, man.
It's unconscious. Put it this way, it's pretty rare to see someone who you would consider a 10 hanging around with someone who you'd consider a 5.
Body-wise,
yeah. It's just, it just doesn't sort of work that way. It's kind of, and it's not even, I don't know that it's even a conscious thing. I think, kind of like Dee Dee said, the what you think is normal just changes every day. So then the person you think you're going to be hanging around with, what you think is normal for them, what you may have accepted a year ago, you may not accept anymore. And that's just, it's, you know, there's nothing to be said about it. It's unconscious. It just sort of happens.
Yeah, the other thing about that too, I don't think a lot of people realize, is that, you know, it does take a lot of work to actually get yourself in a position where you're, you know, in good shape. I hate saying the word in shape, but I mean, there's really no other way to put it. Mm-hmm. But, and so you do a lot of work to get yourself there, and you really don't want, and you know how much work it took you to get there. So you don't really want to associate with anybody that's going to be a negative influence on that.
Oh yeah. Or be tugging you out of that or sort of coaxing you out of it or even teasing about it. Like it's not, you know, most of the other people's reactions is rooted in their view of themselves, their insecurity or security, whatever it is. That's, if someone's, you know, happy for you and they're like, hey, good job, then they're probably pretty secure with themselves. If they're poking at you and, you know, trying to make fun of, like, why are you trying to do that? Most of the time, that's rooted in their insecurity about not being able to do it themselves, which kind of brings me to my next question for Dee Dee. What did you, I mean, in general, give us sort of an idea of the people around you and how they reacted, you know, friends, family, just people you know well, acquaintances, whatever.
Well, that was a very mixed reaction, actually. I mean, like, every person would comment, I look a lot better, and still say I'm being obsessed and being stupid about all losing all the weight and I should stop. So on the one hand, they say, I start looking better. But they still wanna, like, break you down. I mean, break as in, like, slow you down in your process. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of, I mean, it's understandable, psychological, but it still feels kind of strange.
Yeah.
Like, they say you look too skinny, but they also say you look better. So it's, like, what the hell do they mean?
Yeah,
I know what they mean, but it still doesn't make sense logically.
Yeah, they're talking it out of both sides of their mouths. They're supporting you and at the same time cutting you down a little bit.
Yeah, it
depends on what. It's kind of like I always say. I mean, you know, people only decide to do things based on their own self-interest, and that self-interest is pretty much based on the emotional state they're in right now. And what you're saying right now is, you know, people were saying two different things, and that those two things were based completely on the emotional state that they were in at that moment, which to me, it makes total sense, right? So if someone's feeling, if they've been feeling all down about themselves or maybe a little, you know, self-conscious, you know, maybe they'll make kind of the little snide comment, but then, you know, later on when they're feeling better about themselves or maybe kind of feel bad about making that comment, they say the other way to make it up to you or vice versa. So it's really strange how it works, but you know, when you kind of understand that that's how everybody works, you know, all the comments, all the negativity, the positivity, you know, all of these things, they just don't matter because realistically, they really don't matter.
Yeah, it's just a story about them. It's not about you, at least what they're saying. So your story is always about yourself. So,
yeah, you should actually never even take advice from people who are not initiated themselves. Like, even if they say you're being obsessive, like, they look bad, they're overweight, so why the hell should you take advice from these kind of people? Like,
sure.
If somebody who is, like, in great shape will tell me, will like say, yeah, maybe I would do it this way or that way, I will listen to him because he knows what he's talking about. But like, my family is not in a great shape. I mean, not in like, they're not that they're that bad out of shape, but they haven't changed much in their physique. When they try to diet, it doesn't work. So why would I even bother listening to what they say?
100%, and that's. You know, that's the follow up. If you just ask them back and be like, oh, really? If you don't like the way I'm doing this, how would you do it? Most of the time, you just get a blank stare. Like, most people wouldn't really have much to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's not about being combative with people a lot of the time. Some people you have to be just to kind of, you know, frame shake them and just because they don't really understand what they're saying. A lot of times they're just kind of shooting off at the mouth. But, you know, for the vast majority of people, I mean, just, it's just funny because you can look at them and everyone has information. Okay. And so this is where we over the last, 2 years have kind of been putting our stake in the sand, so to speak, is that, you know, there's lots of information. I mean, you can find information anywhere. I mean, you get it from people, you can get it from, you know, the bum down the street, you know, whatever it is. But information is not knowledge, and they're not the same. And then knowledge is not applied knowledge. And so you've got almost three levels of this thing. You've got information, which then needs to be filtered into knowledge, which then needs to be applied to become applied knowledge to where it's very, really useful. And if most people, if their advice was as easy and as simple and as effective as they make it sound, then they would already be there.
Yeah, and that leads into what Didi was saying about if they haven't done it, it's kind of hard to take any of their advice.
Sure.
So I guess we should wrap this up. Didi, what would you give as advice to anybody else who's basically looking to gain some muscle mass? Like, just, you know, do what you did, like change their physique.
Yeah, I think I will still come back to my previous point, and that is, like, just do it no matter the circumstance. Like, it's not always going to be perfect, but if you only work out on a perfect day when you feel great and stuff, then you're only going to have 1 or 2 workouts a day. So even when your workout was only 90% effective, it's still better than nothing. Like, just do it regardless of the circumstances, because life is never going to be perfect. So, yeah, you should also, yeah.
Yeah, life's not perfect. Get a helmet. Get going.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that made sense as a last advice. Yeah. But even when stuff is not going great, just bite through it and keep working. So at least once things go better again, at least you already be a lot closer to your goals.
Sure. Yeah. You have to go ahead.
Yeah, like once life clears up again, at least you already have the Adonis Index, and you won't have to start working on it once everything goes great again, because then you'll have missed the train.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of put the nail on the head. Just let me kind of rephrase it to something that, you know, guys might be able to kind of grasp onto. But you really have to really embody and understand the kind of turbulence of life and just embrace it. Because if you're able to do that, if you're able to embrace change and actually create change and be kind of a harbinger of change, well, that's going to distinguish you from everyone else. While everyone else is hoping and praying for the perfect day that will never come, I mean, you're in there, you know, braving the turbulence and doing what you got to do and moving forward, continuously moving forward, moving forward, moving forward, kind of like that insect mentality. And, you know, it's got to put a smile on your face, because that alone is the only edge you will ever need over everybody else. So yeah, that's powerful, man.
Yeah, because the point is, the perfect day never does come.
Right.
All there is today. So just do what you can with it.
Yep. Yeah, you guys did it a lot more beautiful than I ever could.
Well, we act like we're pros, so that's kind of how we do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Very poetic. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're good here. Thanks a lot for being on the call with us, Didi.
Yeah, it was fun, actually. So that's
yeah. All right, guys. Well, like I say, for John Barbin and Didi, this was your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.